is the Next Trip Podcast with aviation insiders Doug and Drew. Together, with more than 40 years of industry experience, they are creating a network for other av geeks and travel enthusiasts to obsess about all things aviation. All thoughts and opinions are their own.
G'day, everyone, and welcome to the Next Trip New Year Extra Section. We had so much fun during the Christmas Extra Section last week. Doug and I decided to do another bonus for the listeners as we head into 2021.
Yeah, everyone, and this week's bonus section is a 2020 year in review, right, Drew? Or no, yeah. No, it's not. No, we're not doing that. I'm sorry. I'm kidding. No, that's a bad joke. All right. Well, not only do we have fun doing it, we received a lot of positive feedback from the listeners. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us rant about aviation an extra couple of times. Drew, any New Year's plans?
So, okay, when this was on the agenda, are you talking about, and I still don't know, are you talking about New Year's plans for New Year's Eve and New Year's Day? So, or are you talking about?
I'm talking about tomorrow. So today is the 30th. Tomorrow's New Year's Eve. You have to work, right? So probably not a lot of celebrating.
No. Well, there will be because
2020 is gone.
Yeah. No, it's going to be a solemn. Every holiday is a solemn holiday now with COVID-19. So Christmas was a quiet, solemn holiday. So no, I'll be done by around 8 p.m. So I'll be back in time. So Robbie and I are going to heat up our Costco crab cakes and have some cheap champagne from the corner store, and it's all good.
Sounds like a great end of 2020.
Low budget.
We're doing like a little court socially distanced thing because it's NorCal, so it's gonna be mid 50s tomorrow evening, and we're gonna celebrate the East Coast New Year's. We've done that the last couple years because we all have kids, so we do it at 9 o'clock. We all watch the ball drop, and then because we're all parents with young kids, we go to bed at like 10 o'clock.
Maybe we'll start a trend, like, you know, it's one country, so let's just celebrate
at 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock,
or midnight on the East Coast. Right,
and the Californians can start celebrating early, which is probably no problem for you guys.
You know, for the people who don't have kids, if you start celebrating at 9, then you can celebrate every hour until it's actually midnight.
Oh yeah, every time it's like, woohoo, it's New Year in Denver. And then the grand finale will be.
All right.
So I'm glad. Okay. So that's what you were saying. Cause I'm like, oh shoot, I don't know.
No. I just meant for New Year's Eve.
Okay.
Yeah. It was not an existential question.
Cause I did have some bullet points just in case, but oh my goodness. I mean, let's talk about it. No, we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about it later. Yeah. we're going to try and keep this relatively short. And obviously, we've covered a lot of negative news over the last 12 months because it has been 2020. Some of this news revolved around aircraft fleet types, specifically airlines that suddenly announced retirements for these. Not going to get into the list. You can go back and listen to all of our episodes where we talked about it throughout the year. But this got us thinking nostalgically about some trips that we've taken over the years that are impossible to take again because either the airline is gone or the airplane type is gone, at least at that specific airline. Drew and I each have picked out two trips that stand out. We're going to mention the trip. We're going to say the routing, the airline, and the airplane type. We don't know what the other person is going to talk about. So Drew is going to start. He's going to go first. He's going to say it. And then I guarantee I'm probably going to have a bunch of questions about what it was like. And we're just going to do this format back and forth.
For this episode, you guys that are listening, we have very little planning. So this is another curveball by Doug, because I was planning on just telling you and Doug about my two trips. But apparently, I'm just going to tell you the routing and Doug is going to ask me questions. So I'll just have to hold back until you ask me the question I want, because I have a lot to speak about.
Well, Because this is just a totally random episode, if I don't ask the questions that you wanted to talk about, by all means, talk about it.
All right. So the routing is Colombo, Sri Lanka to Seoul, Korea.
Okay.
The aircraft is a 707. How about that for nostalgia?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Any stops or that was it?
Well, that's the one that I want to talk about. So the stop was in Seoul, and then I continued on to LA on a 747. I want to say a 200. Yeah, it was 747-200. You know, this could be an hour episode because that was a great trip. But I want to tell you about the 707.
What were the airlines?
Korean Airlines. This was even before it was Korean Air.
707, same body width as the 737, 757, 727. But I'm guessing the overhead bins didn't exist, right? Was it hat racks? Do you remember?
No, there were definitely overhead bins with doors, you know, doors you could close.
What about lights and air vents above your head? So
yeah, I do remember.
Okay, so it was hanging low. It wasn't like what you see in Airport 1970, which we talked about on the last episode, where the cabin is wide open.
Oh no, it was more modern. I mean, it was a modern 707 cabin, if from what I remember. So do you want to know the year?
Late 80s?
No, earlier. Yeah.
Late 70s?
Yeah, 1979.
Okay. What were the cabins like? Were they like all flowery and psychedelic?
Like so there were two primary colors. It was yellow and orange, I think.
And another shade of yellow.
With Matt. Yeah. Everything was a shade of yellow because, you know, people smoked back then. So this would just blend in with the tinged sidewalls from everyone's smoke. I want someone to verify this. I remember that cabin the way I remember it. Maybe it's because I was 9 years old, is that it was wider than a 737. It seemed
wider. It could just be because you were smaller.
Probably.
In-flight entertainment, the big single screen. Well, I guess probably not in 707.
Yeah, I do somehow remember a single screen being pulled down.
Yeah.
I do definitely remember the plastic pneumatic
ear tubes.
Okay, but now ask me about the routing, because it ended up not going nonstop to Seoul.
Okay, so I'm trying to think. So you're going from Colombo.
But it was unscheduled.
Yeah. I'm trying to picture, so Sri Lanka is off the Indian subcontinent. You're going up to Korea.
Well, let me give you a clue.
Okay.
So Seoul had bad weather. It was snowing. It was the winter.
Was it Tokyo?
Close, okay. But further south. You further probably south. Okay. Nagoya. This is interesting. No, it's not Japan.
Not Japan.
No.
So not Okinawa.
No.
For this, Hong Kong.
No. Further north, it's actually another city in Korea.
Jeju.
Yes.
No way.
I thought you were gonna say Busan.
No, but
you
said no, because Busan is too close to Seoul. So if there was bad weather in Seoul, I figured Busan probably would be socked into.
Yeah. No, so we landed in Jeju Island, and 9 years old, I didn't even know what that was.
Yeah.
So I'm on a 707. I'm an AV geek. At nine, I already knew that. So this was so exciting to me. We had flown through the night from Colombo. I think we left at midnight, and now it's morning. It's dawn, and we're arriving at this weird island, you know, someplace. And on the ground, there's other Korean Air airplanes. And this was the time, Doug, where they were changing from Korean Airlines to Korean Air. So the plane I was on was old school with the, you know, the cheat line and some kind of swan on the tail that kind of looked like China Eastern. But then landing in Jeju,
bird strike.
The bird strike. This was nicer than a bird strike, though. It looked like a swan with a circle. So landing in Jeju, and there's some planes that are newly painted in their light blue, and I thought that was the most beautiful paint job ever. To this day, I love that paint job. So we land there. So the other thing I remember is flight attendants were so nice. They were constantly serving these drinks like guava and pineapple juice and stuff. This was an economy. And I remember the pilot saying, "Ladies and gentlemen, we apologize for the delay. The weather in Seoul is improving." And I could sense in his voice that he was happy about that. We were on the ground for an hour. So he took off, landed in Seoul, and Doug, it was the most surreal thing, because I'm leaving a tropical country. I'm going to a warm state, which is California. And this place, it's snowy and beautiful and weird. And the whole trip was so surreal. So we landed in Seoul in the snow. And I remember coming off with my mom and my brother in the jetway that was so cold. And, you know, I'm wearing flip-flops. I'm dressed for Sri Lanka, you know, t-shirt. And I think I was wearing jeans. But now we're in this freezing climate. It was so cool.
Yeah. Did you know that Jeju to Seoul is the busiest air route in the world?
Yes, I was going to tell you that.
Okay.
Yeah, that is the busiest air route. And back then, I didn't even know where we were.
Yeah.
now it's the busiest air route, Jeju to Seoul. And for those of you that are listening, Jeju is a beautiful island. It's considered the kind of like the Hawaii of Korea, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they go there for their
So question. You said you couldn't go to Seoul because of snow. You diverted to Jeju. What was the weather like there?
In Jeju?
Yeah.
It was cloudy. It was cloudy. I don't remember snow.
But it's definitely not tropical.
No, it's close. It's part of Korea. Now I want to go back just to be like, okay, now I'm hearing it's a beautiful place.
I've heard good things. So it might
be nice to visit.
You ready for mine?
Yeah.
Okay. First one, I flew from Houghton, Michigan, which is in the Upper Peninsula, to Detroit with a tech stop in Escanaba,
okay,
Michigan, on Northwest Airlink on a Metro liner, okay, little 19-seat pencil-looking airplane, no flight attendant, no lavatory. We continued on Detroit to Seattle on a Northwest DC-10. On the way home, Seattle, Minneapolis, Northwest 747-200. And then the final flight was on Northwest Airlink, Minneapolis back to Houghton on a Fokker F-27.
Wait a minute. Okay, so you flew to Detroit on a Metroliner.
Yeah, with a tech stop because it didn't have the legs to make it. It's like 400 miles from Houghton to Detroit. So we had to gas up, load a couple more passengers on the airplane in Escanaba. And then almost like a two-hour flight on a Metro, no bathroom, no flight attendant from Escanaba to Detroit.
All right, then you went Detroit to Seattle?
Uh-huh, on a DC-10.
All right, do you remember the first officer doing the safety briefing on the Metro liner?
I do, yeah, yeah. So interesting. It wasn't my first time or only time flying on either a Metro liner or an express carrier without a flight attendant. United Express, when they used Great Lakes, used to fly Beach 1900.
I think you mean Great Lakes.
Great Lakes, yeah, in Chicago. Yeah, because we would fly from Dubuque, Iowa to O'Hare on Great Lakes Beach 1900s without a flight attendant.
Okay.
And yeah, the FO would give the safety briefing.
Were you, how old were, okay, so this was, say, was this 1986?
No, I wasn't born yet.
You weren't born yet?
No.
80. Okay, so wait.
I remember it. So I definitely remember this.
Okay, so 93?
Yeah.
Okay, so 93. So were you 5?
6.
6. And you remember this. Okay. Were you an AvGeek at that point?
Oh, I was an AvGeek when I was like 2 years old.
Okay, me too. Yeah.
As soon as I can remember.
How long was the fuel stop long enough that you could you remember the fuel stop?
Yeah, we didn't get off the airplane. No, we stayed on the plane. They gassed up, loaded the passengers in Escanaba on the airplane, and then we continued on to Detroit. So it was maybe 30 minutes. Everyone did. It was 1-1.
Okay.
But so the interesting thing with this, with the Metro, the back row had 3 seats. So there was a single middle seat in the back row where you're sitting looking down the aisle.
Weird.
And if I remember correctly, the Metro did not have a door to the cockpit, to the flight deck.
It was just open.
Just open.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Simpler times.
Yeah. Very
simple. Yeah. That's where you could see, like, I remember flying a Jetstream.
J-31. Yeah. I've flown those a couple times. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little bit unnerving because they left the door open. And I remember the first officer wiping sweat from his brow during turbulence. And I'm like, this is not a good feeling. I don't want to know them this much.
Another thing about the door being open. We didn't go through security in Houghton. I don't know if you remember this, but a lot of the express carriers, the outstations they flew to, didn't have security. So you would get to the main hubs, you would get off the airplane, and then you would go through security to get into the hub. Even as places started adding security, if you had like, even if you cleared security, say in Houghton, when they added it, when you got to Detroit or to Minneapolis or to Chicago, you would still go through security a second time because they didn't know necessarily where the airplanes were coming from, who would clear security, where they were
going. So where did you clear security? Was it the same checkpoint as
originating? So you would come into the regional terminal, and then to get into the main terminal, you would go through a second security checkpoint to get into the main terminal, like airside.
Yeah. No, this is news to me because I've never heard of that, where they didn't have security at the regional airport.
Yeah.
All right. So you got to Detroit. Any issues with the flight? Any turbulence? Any?
I don't remember those details now.
Okay. All right. So you got to Detroit. Now you're connecting on to a 747.
DC-10 out to Seattle, and then 747-200 on the way back.
Did you know that you were connecting to a DC-10?
Well, you were fine. I knew it was a DC-10 when we got on it. I can't remember if I knew that at the time.
Okay. No,
but being on the airplane, yes, I definitely knew it was a DC-10.
How did you know? Did your dad tell you it was a DC-10?
I'm sure my parents told me when I was like 3 years old. And so I was one of those 6 year olds who could tell the pilots more than they knew about the airplane.
All right. So what were your first thoughts when was this your first wide body?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
No. I mean, my first thoughts were, I love domestic wide bodies. Like we talk yeah. about this, but that was back in a time. I mean, I flew Northwest DC-10s all over the United States on routes you wouldn't even think, like Minneapolis yeah. to Milwaukee and Detroit to Orlando, things like that.
All right. So this was a DC-10. Was it still morning?
I'm sure it was. Yeah. It was probably like a noon departure from Detroit, I would guess. And then early afternoon arrival into Seattle.
Describe to me the cabin.
Wide open. Absolutely okay. wide open. Yeah. It did have overhead bins. It was, I don't remember if it was the bowling shoe livery for Northwest, which came out in the early 90s, or if it was still the old silver with the white and the blue, because 93, there were still a few of those airplanes around, some of the old, like the 1980s, the Northwest Orient livery.
Wait, you don't remember looking at the planes?
So I do not remember the DC-10. I do remember the 747, though, was the old Northwest Orient livery. I do remember that.
Okay.
So the 747-200 from Seattle to Minneapolis on the return flight definitely was still the old Northwest Orient livery.
Now, were you and your family in a section of three?
I don't remember where we were sitting. I don't think so, because we were, DC-10 was a 252. I'm guessing my mom and I were in the back in a section of two and my dad was up front. I do know for a fact, though, on the way home that we sat upstairs on the 747-200, which would have meant that right. we were in whatever Northwest called their first class at that point.
Okay, so is Dale, if I ask him about this, is he going to use the same line that you use? Like, oh, they didn't really care about first.
Okay, Poppy, thank you. All right, so my daughter has joined us now, and she's
laughing. I know, because yeah. Poppy, you were in first, and then I saw a picture where you went and sat with your mom in economy for a while, and the look on your face was like, can I go back up to first?
She did. She went back and forth many times on that flight. One last thing I want to add, and then I want to get to your second flight. I don't remember getting this on the Metro, but I do specifically remember on the Fokker F-27 from Minneapolis mm-hmm. to back to Houghton. It mm-hmm. was 2-2. Fokker F-27 is an overhead wing, seats about 30 some people. There was a mm-hmm. flight attendant. We boarded in the back. So the F-27, you board in the back. It did have a flight attendant. And get this, Drew, we got a mm-hmm. snack box. We were on an express flight. We were on Northwest Airlink, a regional yeah. flight from Minneapolis to Houghton, Michigan. And we got like this cheese and hummus and cracker snack box. And that was like,
there's no way it was hummus. Not in the
90s. Maybe not hummus, but I definitely do remember like a nacho cheese with crackers.
Yeah,
it was like the same, almost the same box that I got in Delta first class in the COVID mm-hmm. era a month ago was the same box that I got on this right. Northwest Airlink regional flight in 93.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to get back to that, but you're not going to tell me anything about the 747 on the way back. We can't finish this segment and this trip without you telling me about the 747-200. I mean, that's the whole, that was probably your best flight, right, of the four?
Yeah, definitely.
Are you saying that?
I always loved the DC-10 as a kid. The 747 mm-hmm. was cool, but we just the noise of the DC-10, that whining, mm-hmm. that whining noise as you take off, that's one of those things that just sticks, that always has stuck with me. It sticks with mm-hmm. you as an av geek.
Okay.
The 747 is awesome. It's powerful, but it just doesn't have the same sound as the DC-10.
Yeah, but the 747 is so huge.
It is, and it's iconic. And the difference between the 747-200 and the 747-400, at least on Northwest, was the 200 still had the spiral staircase. The 400 was just a straight staircase going up.
Yes.
The staircase on the 200, the first class cabin up front, like up in the nose, was uh-huh. was completely open to the staircase. Uh-huh. So you board on the first boarding door, the staircase is right in front of you, and the whole first class cabin to your left is completely open.
Completely open, yeah.
You go up this spiral staircase, and you end up in the very small, because the 200 didn't have a very big upper deck. You end up in this smaller first class cabin upstairs, and so
this all sounds fabulous, but you're talking about it like it's boring.
No. So the upstairs on the 747 is cool because you have like the little bins next to your seat, between your seat and the window. I don't know if you remember that. It's got
Where were you sitting on this flight?
We were on the left side, like maybe second row back.
Were you in first or economy?
Yeah, first. Because most airlines upstairs, it was all first class. It was additional first class seats upstairs.
Okay, a lot of listeners are going to have a problem with this episode.
Because I was sick.
Because you raved about the snack from Escanaba, but you were sitting in first class on a 747 with a spiral staircase, and you have nothing to say. I'm like bragging stuff out of you. Yeah, we're going to get hate mail.
I was six. I didn't appreciate the finer things in life at that point.
So I flew a 747 or 747s when I was a kid. I was four on a Pan Am 747, and I don't remember half the stuff that you do. So were you sitting in the nose?
No, we were upstairs.
You're upstairs. Okay, and it's a smaller first class cabin. All right, I'll let you off the hook, but do you have anything nice to say about upstairs on a 747-200 at 5 years old?
I prefer the nose.
Really?
Yeah, especially as a five-year-old, because I don't know if you remember flying at that age. I would have to kneel to even see out the window, because the windows were relatively high. Just think about it, you know, you're 5 years old, you're small, you can't really see out the window. And the thing with the 747, and the reason I mentioned those bins next to the seats, the storage bins next to the seats, the way the cabin caves in on the upstairs, just the angle that it comes in. I couldn't really see out the window very well as a six.
Oh, yes, because it's angled. Okay.
Because it's angled. Whereas on the 747 downstairs, there's no angle. It just goes straight up because it's just such a massive cabin.
What I remember sitting upstairs, and I'll tell the story later. This is another good one. I'm surprised I didn't pick this one, but 747-200 from Newark to Frankfurt got the upper deck, and I was a non-rev. So that was like winning the lottery. And that was part of their business class. I remember landing in Frankfurt and you didn't really feel it.
You didn't feel it.
Because you're so high up and the gear is so low. Now in first class, you feel it because you're sitting right above that nose wheel.
That nose wheel.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else? No, let's hear your second one.
No, I'm still shocked that I had to drag information about this.
For the 747.
Yeah. So yeah, now I'm collecting my thoughts because, So the second one, I got to thank Nate about this because after the gym, I was like, okay, I got to think about a second story. And then Nate sends me this picture. How do you feel about the DC-8? You know, some Instagram picture. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, that's not important right now, but you just reminded me.
That's not important right now. Sorry, Nate. we'll come back to that later.
I totally dismissed. No, so my second story is coming back from Tokyo. So I flew with my mom to Tokyo. My mom was going to Sri Lanka. So I non-revved with her to Narita. And then getting back, it was going to be an adventure because all the flights were kind of full. So they said, hey, if we can't get you, this is in Narita, me checking in to get back home to the California, to the West Coast. They said, hey, you're checked in for San Francisco, but it doesn't look that good. So if you miss that, we're going to put you on LA. If you miss LA, we're going to roll you over to Seattle. Mm-hmm. And if you miss that, we got plenty of seats on Honolulu.
Yeah.
So worst case scenario, I'm on a 747 SP to Honolulu.
Which would have you flown on an SP or did you fly?
No, that was, I got bumped off everything, but I got business class on the SP. So this was, Doug, this was like 92, I want to say 92 or 93. So I was 23 years old on a 747 SP in business class, got to Honolulu, and I spent the night in Honolulu. And the next day, and I planned to do that. So the next day I'm going home and it's like, oh, I'm happy to go home. And it was a DC-10, got bumped off that. And this is where back then you knew that it was full, but you didn't have the exact numbers. So you kind of rolled.
You don't have your phone. It's not up to the minute information.
No, you don't have an app. You don't see the seat map. You don't see the standbys. So you get there, and I was working for an express carrier. I was not working for the mainline.
Mm-hmm.
So I was low on the standby list. Didn't get on. Several flights, LA, San Francisco, back and forth, different gates. And finally, they're like, yeah, they kept rolling over the non-revs, right, from all these flights. And eventually, I was like number 60 on this next flight to San Francisco or wherever. So it was hopeless. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't afford to stay in Hawaii. I barely have any money to begin with. So now I'm freaking out and I have to be at work, you know, the next day or something. Then there's this extra section that United added. And this is, you know, this episode is an extra section. So for any airline employee who's standby, you hear the word, hey, we're adding an extra section, you just won the lottery.
Yeah.
Because that means the airline is putting on an extra flight. And to this day, I think that United added that because there were so many non-revs.
Interesting.
And they probably had a plane that they had to ferry.
They had to get back anyways. Yeah.
Right. So for those of you listening, you know, airlines have ferry flights. But then the station can say, hey, we have this ferry flight. We have a lot of cargo and people to get to San Francisco. Can we make this a live flight?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little complication. You have to have crew.
Flight attendants.
A lot of non-revs. I'm sure some of them are flight attendants. So, and probably even a pilot here or there. So guess what the extra section was? Guess which kind of aircraft?
DC-8.
DC-8.
Yeah.
That's why Nate's question reminded me of that. This could be the whole episode, but I'm just going to tell you you're supposed to ask me questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you flew on a 707. How did the DC-8 compare on the interior? Because I've always thought from the exterior, the DC-8's mm-hmm. huge windows had mm-hmm. to have been a thing that you can tell on the inside.
Yes. And back then I was in awe of the window. Yeah. So I was sitting there, I had a window seat. It was so huge to the point you were concerned because it was like a window in your car.
Yeah.
It was so big.
Yeah.
But as far as the cabin, I don't really remember the cabin.
Did it seem like a 757 on the inside? Just super long, like 3-3 seating seemed to go on forever.
Went on forever. And I was sitting in the back.
Yeah.
And, let me tell you, it's so long that when the plane took off from Honolulu, the front of the plane took off first.
You could see it. You could see it rotating.
You could see it bending.
Yeah.
And then in flight, I don't know, have you been in the back of a 747 during turbulence?
I have, but I was in a bulkhead.
Oh, yeah.
So I couldn't see anything.
Okay, so in the back of a 747 during turbulence, that thing wags its tail like a fish.
Yeah.
So, and you can see all the heads bobbing back and forth and it goes through turbulence. DC-8 was twice that because it was really long. So the whole plane is like bending and twisting.
Wait. You said this was like 92?
This was like 92. And yeah, United, 92 and 93.
United saw DC-8s in 92 or 93?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because I started at United Express in 1989.
Okay.
So this trip. Yeah, it was in the early 90s.
Wow.
Could have been 1989, maybe 90.
Okay, but still, yeah. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, so it was a DC-8. And I remember when they added the extra section, I remember a pilot who was non-revving, who was sitting with me, he said, oh, great, there's always seats on a DC-8. Hmm. You know, because the DC-8 was a huge plane.
I see.
Like 200 seats, like a 757. So it was one of those planes where you always got a seat because it was so big. That was my second flight. So that was a good one because I got business class on that 747 SP. I was happier to get this economy seat on this because it was going to get.
I don't know though. I would say flying on an SP, you can't do that anymore.
You can't do that anymore.
Unless you're a high roller for the Sands or MGM or whatever the Vegas casino is that uses it for the high rollers.
Yeah. And back then, the business class, there were these lazy boy type seats. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
They were so cushy.
The plush recliners.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Absolutely.
So that's it. Unless you have any other questions. I mean, and the paint job. I remember the paint job. That's when you
saw Bass.
Yeah, the Saul Bass. Oh,
yeah.
It really, it's like a love or hate relationship with that livery, but it really stood out. There was no confusion. It was United.
So here's a livery question for you. Did United ever paint an SP in the Battleship Gray?
Yeah, they did.
Oh, they did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Looked horrible.
Okay, because I remember having an SP toy as a kid in the United Battleship Gray, but I thought they had gotten rid of them before they converted to that livery.
No, there were a couple.
Okay.
It looked good. It looked okay on a 747, but on the SP, it looked a little busy. It was too much stuff going on. And on a 737 with the dark gray, the rainbow stripe, and then like the alternating dark blue and light, it was too much.
Yeah, too much.
You have another flight to tell me about, right?
So this is a very long trip. I'm going to read through it quickly. And I know it's a lot, but the amount of airplanes on here that you cannot fly on anymore is pretty ridiculous. So I'll go through it quickly and then ask away.
As young as you are, you have all these planes that are not
no longer flying. Around. Well, part of the reason is because I grew up flying Northwest, which
they had old planes.
They held onto their airplanes for years and years and years. Yeah, yeah. I mean when Delta retired the DC-9, and I think it was 2012 or 13, some of their oldest ones were built in the late 60s.
Yeah,
they were like 45 year old airplanes.
You know, I remember dropping my parents off for a Northwest flight. It was a Northwest 727 in the older one with the polished metal, mm-hmm. with the white and the blue.
Yeah,
and I remember my dad saying, "It's like I cannot imagine that livery looking good on any airplane."
I like that livery.
It looked good on the DC-10.
It looked great. Looked great on the DC-10. I didn't think it looked good on the 747. It looked a little bit weird. DC-10 and the 757 looked amazing on the 757. Okay, you ready for this?
Yeah.
All right. So I went from Dubuque, Iowa, to Minneapolis with another tech stop in Waterloo, Iowa. Northwest Airlink on a Saab 340. Then mm-hmm. we went Minneapolis, Atlanta, Northwest 727. Atlanta, Amsterdam, KLM 767-300.
Oh, wow.
Atlanta, Hamburg, KLM 737-400. Berlin, Tegal, which is closed now. Tegal closed 2 months ago, so you can't even fly out of that airport anymore. To Amsterdam, yeah. A KLM City Hopper, Fokker F-27. Then we did Amsterdam, Johannesburg, Cape Town on a 747-400.
Uh-huh.
Then Johannesburg, Durban, Cape Town, Durban, back to Cape Town on a Calm Air, which is a British mm-hmm. Airways subsidiary in South uh-huh. Africa, BA livery operated okay. by a South African carrier that has an agreement with BA to operate BA flights on their behalf within South Africa. On a 737-200.
Okay.
Then we did the reverse back to Cape Town or back to Amsterdam on a KLM 747-400, then Amsterdam Mini 747-400, and then Minneapolis Dubuque on a Saab 340. You're writing these down.
Yeah, that's a lot of information. So a Saab 340, 727. How did that compare to the Sabre line, to the Metroliner?
Oh, Saab was so much nicer than the Metroliner. It had a lavatory, it had a flight attendant. It was 1-2, quieter, much quieter.
Now you went to Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And then you went from Minneapolis to Atlanta. Is that what mm-hmm. you said?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it was a mileage ticket, and okay. and back then you take whatever is the cheapest mileage, and to zigzag.
No. Dale was doing exactly what you do right now.
Dale
he could save the same price for one more flight.
He wasn't on that flight with us.
Oh.
He joined us a week later.
Okay.
Yeah, he flew over a week later, so it was my mom and me.
Minneapolis to Atlanta in a 727.
Yep, that was my last 727 flight.
Okay, tell me about that. Do you remember it? I do.
I vividly remember it was early June, flying from the Midwest down to the South. I just remember we were dodging thunderstorms the entire way. I remember the big puffy cumulonimbus clouds. We were just dodging the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
The cabin felt a lot like a 757. It was like a shorter version of the 757. 2-2 in first, 3-3 in the back. Big windows all over the place. You know, like unlike the Airbus where they're stretched out a little bit, we had like two or three windows per seat. It seemed like, yeah.
Did it feel wider than a 737?
No, it felt the same.
The same, okay.
Yeah.
Was this a 727-200 or
it was
100?
It was a 200. I think by then Northwest had retired all their 100s. So it was the stretched version.
I remember United on the safety card, it said 727 stretch. 727-200 stretched. Is that how Northwest marketed it too?
No, I think they may have. All I remember is the 200. I don't remember the stretch. I think that was a Boeing thing. I think Boeing called the 200 the stretch. Mm-hmm. Some airlines adopted that, and some just called it the 200. Northwest just called it the 727-200, as far as I remember.
You got anything else about that flight you want to tell us about?
No, I don't remember if we got a meal or not. I don't think so, because it was like middle of the day. It wasn't quite a long enough segment, Minneapolis to Atlanta. I don't think we got a meal.
So you got to Amsterdam, then you flew a 760. You got to Atlanta. You flew a 767. You're no longer on the Northwest Airlines. Mm-hmm. So was that your first 767?
It was, yes. And so get this. We didn't know this at the time. It was wet leased by KLM from Martin Air.
Oh, weird.
Martin Air now only does cargo, but back then they had 747s and 767s. So it was a Martin Air interior. It was a Martin Air crew, but the exterior was painted as KLM. And I remember, you know, international flights, international airlines, when they come through with the duty free, like the actual cart where you can purchase things on the spot.
Right.
I wanted to get a KLM 767 model. They didn't have them. All they had were Martin Air models, because all the stuff they were selling was all Martin Air
stuff,
merchandise. Yeah. And so we were in business class, and it was 222. It wasn't 212. Oh, nice. So the seats were honestly, the seats were not that much wider than the seats back in economy, because economy was a 232.
Yeah. 222 is what United has in premium economy now.
Yeah.
On 67.
Yeah. So it felt a lot like that.
So before you boarded, did you know that this was wet leased?
No, we thought that it was KLM service. It was a KLM flight operated by Martin Air.
Were they wearing orange uniforms?
The red. Yeah.
Oh, they, okay. So not even KLM. Okay. Mm-mm. Uniform. Was the service good?
It was marginal.
Okay. Yeah. For the listeners, Martin Air, the best way to describe it would be like Lufthansa and Condor. Condor is the charter. Okay. But you know, Martin Air, they had some 747s too.
They did.
And I don't think they had business class. I think it was all economy.
I think so. Cause I think they're mainly like the leisure carrier for Holland, or they were the leisure destination to some of the less high yield leisure destinations, like the beach markets, like the Caribbean, the Canary Islands, etc. So it was interesting. So this was when Northwest and KLM were partners, but it was before Delta was involved with KLM and Northwest and all that. So the Atlanta to Amsterdam was because KLM was serving it for O&D, so origin and destination, not because there was a partnership with Delta, which is probably why they didn't put their nicer airplanes and nicer service on that route, would be my guess. And that might also be why we were able to get that flight at a decent mileage rate, as opposed to flying KLM from Minneapolis to Amsterdam, because that would have been a very high yielding business travel market. And so that's why we had to do the extra leg down, would be my guess.
Okay. Now, and I know that you love the KLM blue livery.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that Martin Air livery pretty cool with
with like the red and the M on the tail? It does look cool. So I did buy a Martin Air MD-11 model on that flight.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Now I used to love that. So working in Oakland for America West, I remember Martin Air used to fly a 747 in there, and that was like the high point of my day, to watch a 747 land and taxi in at Oakland. And I remember that white, gleaming white with an orange stripe, and that I love that tail logo. It was like an M,
but with it like had a little bit of like a weird swoop thing on it. Yeah, it looked good. It looked good.
Yeah. All right. Cool. So then, So Amsterdam to
Hamburg.
Hamburg on a Fokker F.
No, 737-400, and then we went Berlin to Amsterdam on a Fokker 70, an F-70. We can skip the 737. It was like it was like any 737, but because it's a 400, that's the older generation, you can't find those really anymore. anywhere.
Okay. But I got to ask you, these intra-European flights, did you get served any meals?
Oh, absolutely, we did. And Amsterdam to Hamburg was like a 45-minute flight. We got a sandwich and drink service. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. I mean, in the U.S., they'll say, hey, we don't have enough time to serve you because it's such a short flight. You want some, if you're lucky, you'd get a glass of water that they bring on the tray. You
know? Yeah.
No, that's great that they do that. All right. Then, okay, you went back to Amsterdam.
From Berlin
on a F-27.
On an F-70. So do you know what an F-70? Do you remember those? Yeah.
It was like the Fokker 100.
It was like a smaller Fokker 100. So it was kind of like a DC-910 versus a DC-930. So it's a little bit shorter. It was 2-3. So the Fokkers had interesting shaped windows. They were ovals. They weren't like the rectangular. Okay. Yeah. Big, very bright windows. I do remember that. Because it was KLM City Hopper, which is like their regional carrier, there was no first class. It was just 2-3 seating throughout the entire airplane. I think we got service. I don't remember about that because I was so excited about flying the 747 that night. That's all I was thinking about was I just want to get to Amsterdam because we're about to get on a 747 for the next 12 to 16 hours.
Okay, so you got to Amsterdam. Now, was that your first 747-400?
It was, yes. And the thing that I remember the most about this was it was hot and it was humid in Amsterdam. And we were about to fly 6,000 miles to Johannesburg, which isn't necessarily pushing the range of the 747 per se, but because it was hot and humid, I remember we were on that runway for what seemed like 2 minutes on the takeoff roll. I remember we rotated and it felt like the airplane was just not going to get airborne. And looking out the window, I saw the piano keys. So the end of the runway go by and it felt like it was like 20 feet below us.
Oh my God.
Felt like we were just not climbing out of there. You could just feel as a passenger, you could just feel how heavy that airplane was.
Was it full?
It was packed. Absolutely packed. So we flew.
Was it summer? Summertime, right?
It was like June, end of June. Flew through the night, landed in Johannesburg the next morning. It was not a tech stop. So KLM used to do what they called tag flights, like some airlines used to do. So the 747 sat like 350 some people. I would say about 325 of them got off in Johannesburg.
Okay.
And there were about 25 of us on this entire airplane for a 2-hour flight from Cape Town or from Johannesburg to Cape Town.
Now you weren't business class, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. We couldn't get off the airplane. So we sat in the seats for like 2 hours during this stop.
Oh my God.
And there were three of us in business class.
Okay. And then you flew Calm Air on that.
And then we were in Cape Town for like a day or two, and then we flew to Durban for a couple days and then back. And I remember both of the Calm Air flights, the 200s from Cape Town to Durban and back, we boarded from the ramp. So we had to go out onto the ramp, up the stairs. Mm-hmm. So I just remember walking by the airplane. I think it was my first time on a 737-200, first and only time on the 200 with the cigar engines, the long, skinny ones. I just remember thinking how cool it was. And even then I knew that those were mostly going away. And so I knew that was probably the last chance that I would have to fly on one of those.
So you're boarding this, and does it say British Airways on it?
It does. It says British Airways operated by Calm Air. It's kind of like a regional carrier here would say American Eagle operated by Republic. It said British Airways operated by Calm Air, and it was the World Tails still.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Even Calm Air had the World Tails on it.
Okay, got it. All right, and then back to Amsterdam on a 747-400. Did you stay in Amsterdam?
No, we had like six hours on the ground. So that was a really long day. We left Cape Town in the afternoon, flew to Johannesburg, 2 hours on the ground, Johannesburg, couldn't get off the flight, 12 hours back to Amsterdam overnight, 6 hours on the ground for like the late afternoon departure back to Minneapolis. That was a lot of flying. It took like 48 hours to get home, basically.
Minneapolis, but then you connected to another flight.
Another Saab 340.
Oh my goodness. So that last flight was like, okay,
I don't even remember that last flight, to be honest.
Yeah. You probably wanted to forget about it. All right. So that's an amazing trip.
Sorry to talk so long about that, but it was one of those things. It was like this trip just seemed like it was such an AvGeek nostalgia trip that I couldn't not talk about it, because just looking at the list, like Saab 340, you're really only going to fly those if you're flying on Silver Airways down in Florida, or like that's pretty much it. 727's gone, 767-300's largely gone around the world. I mean, there are a couple that you might be able to get. 737-400's gone, F-70's gone, 747-400's mostly gone, 737-200's, unless you're flying on that Canadian cargo airline, those are gone.
Well, I wanted to, okay, so was it another 747 to Minneapolis?
Yeah, from Amsterdam to Minneapolis, yeah.
On KLM?
On KLM,
Okay, so and this is before their mutual hub at Amsterdam? I mean,
No. This was after. The mutual hub started in 93, I think it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've talked about this trip before. I really want to go to Cape Town. And there's so many interesting ways to get there. There's so many airlines that fly there.
Yeah, I mean, you could go through the Mideast on any of the Middle East three. You could go through Kenya. You could go through Ethiopia. You could go through any of the European destinations. You can go nonstop from the US. Oh, can I say one thing about being in Cape Town?
Yeah.
We were at this little straight off the boat seafood restaurant, like 40 minutes outside of Cape Town. I remember this like it was yesterday. We're sitting out on the dock eating this amazing seafood. And I remember seeing this Qantas 747-400 taking off and banking just up into the clouds. And my first thought was, I can't believe the Qantas flies to Cape Town. Because think about that. That from somewhere in Australia, I don't know if it was from Perth or Melbourne or Sydney, they had to have gone to Johannesburg or something first and then had a tag flight to Cape Town like KLM had. And if you look, like I've looked at it since, if you look at a map, that is a long flight.
That is.
And we always think about the Great Circle route, you know, like we see it go up over the pole. Like you're flying from San Francisco to India, you go north, you go up over the pole. This flight went over Antarctica.
Oh, that's
because because it's the southern route, the southern Great Circle. So it goes south instead of going north. And so just thinking about that, like, because there's so few routes in the world that take that. The Antarctica. So that's got to go on our list. Something in the southern hemisphere.
Yeah. Well, Qantas is also, I think they're talking about doing the flights to nowhere where they take off from Sydney and fly over
Antarctica. Yeah.
And then come back. Yeah. You know, we're so northern hemisphere focused, right? Most of my flights, even to Sri Lanka is still in the northern hemisphere. So
barely.
Just barely. Yeah. It's right north of the equator. But when I go there, I would never go there via the southern hemisphere. Good trips. I have not been to Africa, so I want to get to more of the southern hemisphere and see that part.
Thanks for joining the conversation. Thanks for sticking with us for our first full year. Wishing you all a great end to what has arguably been the toughest year of our lives. Here's to brighter days on the horizon.
Yeah, Doug, we made it. We made it through a lot of issues, not just, you know, the stuff we talk about, the stuff that, you know, in our lives that we've dealt with in 2020. Guys, we'll be back on Monday. We'll be on our normal schedule, kicking off the new year. Now, vaccines are coming out, so we need everyone to hang in there, stay safe, you know, travel like Doug and I do, but travel safely and use your, you know, good judgment. Enjoy the final day of 2020. Stay safe and stay aviation tough.
This has been the Next Trip Podcast. Visit nexttripnetwork.com for information about previous episodes, trip reviews, aviation photos, and other aviation-related content. This is your show, so search for The Next Trip on Twitter and let Doug and Drew know what you want to talk about. Not on Twitter? You can also email them at nexttrip.podcast@gmail.com. Please consider leaving a review wherever you download your podcasts. It will help other listeners like you discover this show.